is Friday, September 6, 2013, and Primetime Sports, Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation, is on the air coast to coast on the Fan Radio Network and simulcast on Sportsnet in high definition. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with Stephen Brunt to my right, Dave Perkins to my far right, and Ken Reed to my left. Greetings and salutations to y'all. Plenty to talk about in the next 60 minutes, so let's get at it right off the top. It didn't take long for Brian Burke to land a new gig, but this would not exactly have been the gig anybody would have expected. It's not that we would have been shocked that he winds up in Calgary, but for the general manager to remain in place and the president to remain in place and for them to find a way to wedge Burke in between the two of them and then get him to take the job, on the surface, at least, appears to be a little surprising. Burke, on this program and elsewhere yesterday, tried to paint a picture that suggests that he's more than comfortable with this scenario and expects it to continue for some time. Are you buying, Brunt?
It's an odd one. I've been thinking about it since we got the news yesterday. And the more I think about it, the more Brian's made a very savvy move here. This is a great situation for Brian Burke because, you know, he goes into a franchise where, you know, they've hit bottom, but they kind of cleaned up. The mess is pretty much cleaned up so that they are in a position now where you haven't got a lot of dead money. You can move forward. You can try and rebuild the team, but no one thinks it's going to happen in 2 years or 3 years. You know, it's 4 years, 5 years. So there's lots of breathing space. And they're going to get a new arena there, I would assume, during that time as well, which will be a bit of a moment of revitalization there. They're going to eventually get a new rink. So on the business side, fan side, people are going to be patient. They're going to look forward to the new building. And at the same time, if things go, you know, if something really disastrous happens, it's on the other guy's watch. You know, it's Jay Feaster's business. So, and I don't know how Brian Burke can be in the front office of a hockey team and not make the hockey decisions. I don't know how that can possibly be. I'm not sure what he would do. But in terms of kind of the long range with the Calgary Flames and being in a position to be there when it gets better, I think, you know, I think he's been pretty savvy about this one, actually, and I think he's probably picked a pretty good spot.
Ken Reed?
I'm pretty sure when he was in Hartford, Vancouver, Anaheim, Toronto, there were other guys in the office. I don't really think it matters what the title is. If he has GM after his name, because if you're in charge of the GM, you're ultimately in charge of the GM anyway. He's obviously worked with people his whole career. Nobody works in a front office on their own. So I think he'll definitely give it a go, and he'll give Jay Feaster the benefit of the doubt. I'm not sure how long it'll last, but I do know this about Burke. He's definitely in the right city because the guy's a cowboy. Let's face it. He says what he wants. He does what he wants. And having spent five glorious years in Calgary, I lived there for 5 years. It's a town where people like, when they ask you how you doing, they want to know. They're not just saying, how you doing? Oh, I'm fine, thanks. If you tell them I got a problem with it, they'd like that. It's an upfront city. He's an upfront guy. He's a good fit. And like Stephen said, he's got a long, long time for a rebuild there. I think Ken King said there wasn't even a length on his contract. It's kind of your job till you want it. So he's in for, the Flames are going to stink. Let's face it, they're not going to be a good hockey team. So, yeah, he's in for a long rebuild, and I think they'll all play nicely in the same sandbox for a little while. But brings us back to our Tim Lywicki discussion. When a new boss comes in, sometimes things do change.
Dave Perkins?
Yeah, you wonder how much he learned by his exit here. And I agree with what you're saying about Calgary is probably a good spot for him to land. I mean, he can probably go to a board meeting and use words with K's in them, you know, without – you know, paying the price like he did here. And he can, you know, Calgary isn't nearly as corporate as Toronto in that way. And like I say, the team isn't going to be any good. But I wonder what he learned here and what he'll take there about playing in the sandbox mm-hmm. and about the way he comes across to people and the way he, you know, is perceived. I wonder if there's a little bit of a dimming, you know, that will take place on that, on this big personality of his that'll, you know, let him fit into this role a little more easily.
You know what? If he did learn something from it, I think he's going to one of the few cities where he doesn't really have to learn anything from what he did here to go to Calgary, because they like it in your face and a little brash out there. So maybe if he does, it'll only help him. But if he doesn't, I don't think it'll hurt him all that much out there.
Yeah, and you think of that ownership group. You know, I don't think anybody's going to.
Yeah, they've been there forever.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think anybody's going to get upset the way members of the ownership group may have in Toronto. And he's got Ken King there who, you know, among other things, will do all the schmoozing, right?
Correct.
He's a master of that stuff. So he will be the guy that works the politicians. He'll be the guy that goes to the dinners. You know, Burke may want to do some of that stuff, but he doesn't really have to.
He doesn't have to.
But he's good at it. He's good at it. Yeah. I've seen Brian Burke at dinners and charity events and things like that, and he's very good in the room, and he's going to be great for a great guy to have on side when you're looking for a new arena, you know, to start with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listening to you guys, it occurs to me, was this the only offer that Brian had? And I would think it probably was. We aren't aware of another one, and we are, you know, we're in training camp already. Why weren't there other offers? Why weren't there other opportunities?
I got to think of how many GM jobs changed in the offseason. There wasn't a lot in play.
Well, remember, the GM job wasn't sacrificed to bring Brian Burke to Calgary.
Well, maybe,
but remember, it was a funny season last year. It was a 48-game season. It's tough to rinse a guy off a funny season like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because things happen that wouldn't normally happen, and, you know, teams that fell short, you know, it's easy to believe that with the other, you know, 24, however many games it would have been, things might have been a little different. 34 games, I guess, would have been different. You know, I'm just saying, it was a different season last year, so maybe a lot of triggers didn't get pulled.
Yeah, but one of the downsides, let us not forget this, and I don't know if this issue has been raised. The allegation was, and I have no reason to believe it's not true, that the principal reason Brian Burke left Anaheim was geography. He got tired of living on the West Coast. He wanted to be in the East.
But his kids were in Boston.
His family was.
Right. Now he's basically back West. He may not be on the West Coast, but he's as close as you can get to the West Coast without being on it, pretty much.
Well, kids are three or four years older.
Yeah, a little older now. He's got a daughter in Calgary, from what I understand, from what I've read. So, got that going for him.
Still, you know, I assume his two youngest kids are still back here in Toronto, and he does still have family in Massachusetts. So that's a factor, too. Ultimately, I wonder if anybody contacted him and said, you know, to your point, I think it was, Perk, you know, with a shortened season, tough to rinse a GM. I wonder if anybody contacted him and say, hey, just high alert, you know, if we get off to a bad start, you know, we probably will want to talk to you. Maybe he thought a bird in the hand is better than one in the bush.
Yeah, possible.
Well, he created the job for him, right?
He claims he said no to it.
He said he turned it down. That's right. And they came back to him. So
I've sweetened it. I don't know if he had any other offers, but I just really like the fit. I mean, he's an old school guy, and he proved here when he was working for this two massive corporations, he's going to rub some people the wrong way. And in Calgary, what, there's 6-7 owners, they're old school oil guys. I mean, Brian Burke's going to fit in with those guys.
I don't dispute that, Kenny. What I wonder is Brian Burke's thought process in taking this job.
Well, I think we went through. It's all upside, no downside. The only guy, the downside is maybe for Jay Feaster. Mm-hmm. And if I was him, I'm not sure I would be sleeping completely comfortably. And he's a guy who, no, he did win a Stanley Cup. You know, it's not like he hasn't done anything in his career, and suddenly there's a guy above him.
Sorry. Don't you think that if they were going to rinse Feaster, they've had more than a few opportunities to do that?
Yeah, they could have, but obviously they believe in the guy to a point.
So what do you think can happen over the next 2 or 3 months other than Brian Burke stabbing him
I'm just saying that if there's, you know, if things don't go well on some level, you know, you have.
But they're not going to go well.
Well, no, but beyond that, everybody knows they're not going to be good. But if there's a sense that this rebuilding program
stalled,
even in its early days, if you don't think Jay Feaster's draft picks are going to pan out, or if you don't like, you know, the consequences of previous stuff. No, I'm saying he got a scapegoat. He's your scapegoat.
It's a 3-year scapegoat.
Yeah,
he's your window.
Probably, yeah.
Because the Flames don't have to do anything on the ice for 3 years.
Yeah, see, I've read repeatedly about people saying, Burke will be the GM by October or November or December.
No.
I don't think Feaster's going anywhere for at least this year.
at the very minimum the entire season and probably longer than that. Unless there's some kind of, as I said, unless Burke gets frustrated, uncomfortable, and insists that he take over the GM job.
And if he wanted to be an NHL GM, I bet you Calgary wouldn't be the place he'd pick.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Why do you think not?
Well, yeah. I think he'd want to go for a little bit, you know,
higher profile,
a team that's a little further along.
I don't know. I
mean, he loved being in Toronto. He loved being in Vancouver. He loved the media action, even though he sparred with everybody all the time. He loved that action. He fed off it.
He'll get that action in Calgary if he wants to get it. He'll get it.
Well, he's a national celebrity, quote unquote. Now, he'll still be on this program and ones like that, you know, on a regular basis. I mean, let's be honest. Brian Burke in Calgary raises the profile nationally of the Calgary Flames. Media people will be paying more attention to the Calgary Flames with Brian there than if he wasn't. A lot more.
Well, and I think if you're Brian Burke, what would you want? You'd want to go into a place where you can succeed, you know, where you have owners who are not going to get in the way. Well, you got that in Calgary. You got a pretty close to a blank slate, and you're in a place where they care about hockey. Never mind the size of the market. You know, we worked in Anaheim, which is part of a mega city where no one cares about hockey. You know, Brian Burke was pretty anonymous when he was in Anaheim.
Yeah, he was.
So he's going to be a big dog in Calgary. You know, so if he wants to be the big dog, and it's not, you know, he's had Toronto and he's been in Vancouver, but other than Montreal, where else are you going to get? Where else are you going to be a bigger deal as the head of a hockey team?
So you guys are saying during the games the camera will be locked on Burke, not on Feaster?
Yeah.
But he made the point yesterday at his own press conference.
That'll be interesting, won't it?
Of saying to the press, said, look, when they make a trade, don't call me, call Feaster.
Mm-hmm.
And when something's going on business-wise, don't call me, call Ken.
Maybe that goes back to your point, Perk, about what did he learn from Toronto? Maybe he's taking a step back.
Yeah, he's the one who said that, but don't call me.
That's day one at a news conference where he knows what the scenario is, and he knows people have got, you know, a Spockian eyebrow raised. Like, why are you taking this job as the cheese in the sandwich, you know?
Yeah.
This doesn't make much sense. He's no dummy. No. Whatever Brian Burke is or you think he is, he's no dummy.
Correct.
He knows what the politically correct thing to do yesterday was, and he did it. As the days move into weeks and move into months, he's going to be able to distance himself from being the politically correct guy that he was on day one. And we're going to see what's really going on here. And if I was the guy in the truck with my finger on the trigger, my ISO camera would be on Burke, not on Feaster.
Better TV.
Well, and it still will open the question even months from now. Every time you put that camera on him, I wonder what Brian Burke really does during the day. I wonder if Feaster can go to the John without asking Brian Burke's permission. If Feaster announces a trade, is it a Brian Burke trade that Feaster is announcing, or is it a Feaster trade that Brian Burke has just
signed off on?
Right.
Either way, it's a Brian Burke trade, is it not, if he has to sign off on what Feaster does?
Yeah, ultimately. And yet there's Burke yesterday talking about, well, I don't anticipate we're going to have any problems, and I don't think I'm going to veto anything.
Yeah, but like you said, you never start a job going, oh, man, in 6 months I think this is really going to stink.
I'll tell you what is interesting, and one of the things that Brian brought up yesterday, too, was, and I can't remember whether it was here or elsewhere, he talked a lot about a five-year plan, and that's not unique. Everybody has a five-year plan. I'm talking about when he came to Toronto. And then he all of a sudden addressed the fact that he came to the realization very quickly that the five-year plan wasn't going to work, that there wasn't enough patience in Toronto, and he had to expedite it to 3 years. Now, he'd never said that, at least in my presence, before. So I'm not sure that isn't revisionist history on Brian Burke's part. I'm not sure that he actually ever did accelerate the five-year plan to a three-year plan.
You don't think that's what the Kessel deal was? Because I sure do.
No, I think what happened
was an attempt to accelerate. Yeah.
I think what happened was he realized he had to redo the roster. And when he redid it, and I've said this before, when he redid it, it was in that first summer. He'd come in November and he'd been around for a few months. In that first summer, he went out and got a couple or three defensemen that he thought turned the Maple Leafs into a top. Their blue line was going to be top 10 in the National Hockey League. And that with that blue line, he had the basis for a team that could make the playoffs right away. He was going over to Finland to get a goaltender, which he got. Didn't turn out to be much of a goaltender.
Sweden.
Or Sweden, that's what I meant, yeah.
Same thing.
And that didn't really work out, but he thought he had that sort of answered. And then all of a sudden he realized, you know, the only thing I'm missing here is a gunner.
That's because he accelerated the five-year plan, though. He accelerated
because he talked himself into believing that his defense was top five, top ten in the National Hockey League.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's going to be awfully tough for him to remain patient in Alberta because right up Highway 2, there's a team that suffered for a long time and did it the slow way.
Run by his good pal, Kevin Lowe.
The barn. We all know that.
That's going to be fantastic.
The Oilers are going to be good. Maybe not this year, but in a year or two. And they did it the patient way. I guess the un-Brian Burke
way. The old-fashioned way, but been really bad for a long time.
A lot of years of garbage.
That hasn't materialized yet, and I think you're right. It probably will.
It will.
But you would know from being in Calgary.
But they wouldn't do that.
In Calgary, they look north to what Edmonton's doing, and in Edmonton, they look south to what Calgary's doing.
They do, but I'll say this. Edmonton looks at Calgary a lot more than Calgary looks at Edmonton, but they do look at each other. But when Edmonton starts to be styling and profiling, Calgary's going to be doing a lot of looking up north at Edmonton.
Well, and then I wonder if, you know, the heat gets turned up on Burke and Feaster.
It could.
Just like Burke claimed, it got turned up here in Toronto.
And he didn't have the patience to suffer in Toronto. Right? They didn't have the patience to tank and go bad for three years in Toronto.
One of his first moves was to get rid of two draft choices.
He was never interested in that.
The problem with Calgary is they have stunk the last couple of years, but they've got nothing for it.
Not yet, although they claim they had a pretty good draft. We shall see. The break. We'll be back with more. The Roundtable continues. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. We getting our new studio, Brent?
You told me about it. No one else. You're the only one that thinks we're getting one, as far as I can tell.
Oh, really? Okay.
I never heard about it.
See,
I'm not in the.
Well, you wouldn't hear about it. You never come up.
I'd be out there on the grapevine.
You're downstairs with all the makeup people.
I know. Well, thanks for inviting me.
TV superstar.
It's nice to come up here.
Well,
there
was a couple of guys couldn't make it.
I figured. Well, I kind of figured out when I got the text at 3:30. Kind of figured something was up. Go to the bullpen. He can't go. What about the lefty? No. What about? Give me that guy then.
You may be the Ricky Romero of primetime sports.
Oh, that's a lot of chances I'll get on
this
show.
You feel better now, don't you?
Once a starter, then a reliever. So, look, the recalling of Ricky Romero clearly has left some people scratching their heads. But this is a guy the Toronto Blue Jays have a lot of money and time invested in. You can't be that surprised, really, Perk, can you?
His problems are not here. His problems are here. That's what they believe. So they owe him $8 million for next year. Get him back here, treat him like a major leaguer, and hope that whatever was ailing him, he can shed and get back on the right side of things. I mean, well, what do they got to lose at this point?
Yeah.
He's an empty suit otherwise.
Yeah, and he showed, honestly, almost nothing in AAA. If you go and look through it start by start, there's nothing there to suggest that he's going to come back to the major leagues and be overwhelming or even necessarily good. But I don't know what they've got to lose here.
Exactly.
You're going to have to pay him anyway. He's
untradeable, I would think.
Yeah, I think he'll come to spring next year as a non-roster guy. Somebody could claim him. I guess he could declare himself a free agent, but I don't think he's going to do that with all that money sitting out there that they still owe him.
No.
So maybe he does something and he interests somebody else. Maybe there's a miracle rebirth. But I don't get the sense that the organization's counting on him at all. Zero. You know, and if you listen to what Alex said, he said, "Yeah, we expect to see him in spring next year. We expect he'll be a non-roster guy, and we'll hope for the best."
Are we comfortable with the notion that he won't get a start in the month of September? That he'll pitch exclusively out of the bullpen?
I have no idea what they're going to do with him.
Who cares?
What does it matter?
Who cares?
At this point?
The season's a disaster. If you want to call him up. If you want to start him, if you want to work him in a 14-2 game, who cares? They blew this season long ago, so they might as well do something.
Oh, no, I don't mean it. I'm talking about what they're trying to accomplish with Ricky Romero. by pitching him out of the bullpen, does that accomplish whatever your objectives are? If your plan is to try and see if you can get a nibble from somebody that where you could include him in some kind of a package and a deal next year, if he shows something half-assed decent in the month of September, aren't you better to do that as a starter?
Do you try to turn him into Brett Cecil, maybe? Because Cecil couldn't do it as a starter.
Except he can't get lefties out.
That is groove in the bullpen.
A small problem with him. You know, he's better against righties than he is against lefties. What they did the other day, they had Jeremy Jeffress up. They called him up, and he pitched in a high-leverage situation, right, in an extra-inning ball game. Jeremy Jeffress, the guy, you know, who was kind of a long-shot guy in spring, come and they bring him back in September. He can throw the ball 100 miles an hour, but he can't hit the plate. And they give him a shot, and he looks sort of like the guy in the spring. But the season's lost. Ricky Romero could go out and throw a two-hitter right now, and I'm not sure.
What would it matter?
Yeah, what's it matter? You're still going to have exactly the same questions next March as you would right now.
Yeah.
But I think they'll throw him in there for an inning or two, and I don't know that they'll set any of the guys down who are starting right now. I don't know why they would, unless somebody gets sore.
Yeah, unless somebody got banged up or it was a spot start or whatever emergency. But yeah. I don't think they. Do you think they really know where they're going to use him right now? I mean, do they really care where they put him?
The indication has been he's going to pitch out of the pen.
I think it's a very low priority.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
They have so many question marks now for next year. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think the calling up of Drabek is a more interesting situation because at least you could pencil him into the equation for a starting job next year. Like, I'm not saying he has one. It's in pencil. But when you list the candidates for starting pitching for the Blue Jays next year,
right,
if you did it right now,
you have two.
Drabek and Hutchison are both on that list.
See, and so is
and
Morrow.
Ricky God, probably isn't.
And God only knows if Morrow will ever pitch again. Yeah, well, I mean, who knows?
That's just it, playing this whole candidate thing for the starters. The starters next year should be Dickie, Burley, and then go out and get some people. Because you know what?
Easier said than done,
but you got an outfielder's a little banged up who might be 100% come spring training. His name kind of keeps popping up.
I'd get rid of him in a heartbeat.
Jose Bautista gone?
I'd get rid of Bautista in a heartbeat. For me, he's now officially injury prone.
He's got a very
tradable contract. Let somebody else take a chance on the guy.
Forget about putting natural grass in if you trade Bautista?
He'd bring you. Well, I'd get rid of Reyes.
It's Reyes.
The guy's going to break down. He's injury prone.
Well, I don't know. I think injury prone's a myth. Now, you know, a guy hurting his hip and a guy hurting his wrist last year. You know, it's not a pitcher with a bad arm. It's Reyes sliding in and jamming his ankle.
Some guys stay on the field. Some guys don't.
Well, but that's as much luck and fluke and coincidence as it is anything else.
Well, okay, trade the unlucky guy.
But no, you're not going to trade Bautista unless you get enormous value.
Well, you will get.
You know, well,
that's what I'm saying.
That's a good question, Perk. You know, and again, I think
you will get something.
You'll get something, but you got to get enough value to replace a guy who's a 30 and 100 guy on a really, really good contract.
Yep.
You know?
You got to get something significant if you're going to move him.
So,
I think he's your best trade chance.
He is your best asset, but I mean, do you do it?
You only do it for a starter.
Right.
And at least a middle of rotation starter. You're not going to do it for a fringe starter. You want a guy who you figure is at least a, you know, 12 and 12 or 14 and 14 kind of guy.
Well, let's not talk wins, but yeah.
Let's talk innings.
Well, somebody that can eat some innings.
Yeah. Come on. How many innings has Josh Johnson pitched this year?
Yeah, but in this day and age, that's almost becoming a misnomer. I mean, managers just don't let anybody finish games, and everybody's being so babied.
Well, Burley's got to throw 200 innings, so it's not, you know, that he's, again, so there
which,
are.
Which was his rap coming in?
But his pitch count is the best on the club per inning. That's why he's going to throw 200 innings.
He makes guys hit ground balls. He doesn't go up there throwing heat, trying to strike everybody out every night.
Well, let's turn to another.
Somebody said for
that. A few weeks ago, we couldn't have had a conversation about the future of Josh Johnson because everybody would have said, well, he's gone. You're not going to qualify him. You're certainly not going to sign him. He's gone. He's out of here. Well, now there's reason to believe that Anthopoulos isn't ready to acknowledge that and might be interested in bringing Johnson back. I'm not clear as to what the circumstances would have to be, but does this make sense to anybody?
Well, it depends. You know, you're not going to make him a qualifying offer at $13 or $14 million, and no one else is going to pay him that in Major League Baseball. So he's going to become a free agent.
Would you give him 10 as a free agent?
Well, you would make
1 year for 10.
Well, you might build an incentive laden deal. You might try, and the Jays haven't done that in general. That has not been their style, but that's the way, you know, if you were interested in Josh Johnson, you know, at a price, you know, with a bunch of incentives built in, that might not be the worst risk in the world.
The scenario I heard last week was they have a wink and a handshake deal with Johnson, whereby they extend him a qualifying offer, he turns it down, and then signs a 2-year contract for less that he's got in his back pocket. And that they're willing, they'll give him less for 2 years, and he'll take it for the security of having a 2-year contract mm-hmm. and the chance to rebuild his
reputation.
He can't be this bad. Like, he's not this bad. Like, he is, but he can't be. He can't be a 2-8 guy.
Well, and here's my observation, and this is not based on any information. This is a supposition entirely. What we see is a guy who appeared lost, who appeared unable to get people out, who wouldn't throw his best pitch, looked like he didn't want to throw his best pitch, whose velocity had gone down pretty dramatically.
Not a huge amount from last year, but he couldn't locate his fastball.
His best pitch.
Yeah, so he couldn't locate his fastball, so he was trying to get guys out with secondary stuff.
He lost trust in his fastball.
Yeah.
And he got beat up. Then he got hurt. If the Toronto Blue Jays believe they know what's wrong with Johnson, and I don't mean physically wrong.
That may be part of it.
Mechanically.
Maybe physically.
Or maybe he was physically. Maybe he was hurt all year, not to the point of being DL'd. They didn't tell anybody, which wouldn't be unusual. We didn't know about it, blah, blah. So there's a series of possibilities of circumstances that could lead you to say, you know what? This year is a mirage. There's an excuse. There's a reason for it. He's fixable.
Yeah.
Let's do what you suggest. They may have offered.
They have, by my count, $123 million committed for next year, $124 million committed for next year to the first 12 or 13 guys. And that includes a bunch of guys getting huge raises. Burley goes to, I think, $19 million, mm-hmm. and Dickey goes to 15 or 16, and Reyes goes to, I think, 22. And they got a ton of money committed for next year. And I don't think they're in a position to mess around with expensive contracts.
Well, how many?
I really don't.
Well, but they get a big whack of dough. You know, again, their revenues went way up this year. They get a big whack of dough from MLB next year.
Right, but they won't sell one ticket this offseason.
Well, I was going to say, who's going to be lining up to buy flex?
Who's going to fall for this November and December like everybody did last?
Well, it depends what you
do. Depends on what you do.
But I don't think they're going. Again, I don't think they're going back.
You guys think people would go crazy again in December buying tickets?
They haven't sold a ticket in 2 months.
You can't say, you know, you didn't think what happened last offseason was going to happen. And even when the first shoe dropped, you sure didn't expect Dickey to be the next shoe.
Right.
You know, so you can't sit here and say, and look, I believe there's I don't think that Toronto Blue Jay fans, while they've given up on and are disappointed and even angry at this team this year, I don't think at the core they believe they're bad. I think they think they're close, which is what I think. I think they played poorly.
Oh, I think starting pitching collapsed.
But enough to empty your wallet again? People lined up and bought a lot of tickets this year, a lot of flex packs.
And they haven't sold any tickets in the last 2 months.
Well,
So let me give you
off the bat, their attendance was projected at 2.9.
Suppose the Dodgers lose their minds and decide, and one day we wake up, Bautista for Kershaw. Now, you tell me that doesn't sell tickets?
That might tick off some people because they love their Jose Bautista.
Yeah, but you can make a better case for bringing a Kershaw in here.
But
I mean, that kind of a move.
But I think I don't think they're going backwards payroll-wise. They're not going backwards. I think they're going to add.
They're hamstrung where they are. They can't do big, bold things this
says
winter.
Says who? No, I don't think that's true at all.
Steven, do you think they're around 140?
Going to how much?
I think they will add payroll.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go to 150?
I don't think that's out of the question, Perk. Okay. I think on 40s, 140 is certainly not out of the question because they pushed their chips into the middle of the table last year.
That's $17 million for 9 guys. Or no, $17 million
on
for
the
11
mic.
Guys.
Stay on the mic.
No.
$17 million for 11 guys.
I think that they're I don't think this is a no, they
that's
can't
not
back
big
up.
Bold.
We gotta go.
No, they can't back up.
Finish your sentence.
No, they can't back up. They're gonna spend more.
The only thing that's gonna back up is the truck with the money in it.
Bob's going to give up some of his money.
Bite your tongue. I'll be in line when that truck backs up, too. My pocket's empty. 24 before the hour, the break, and then primetime continues. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network or watching on Sportsnet. We are down to the last and final segment of the program for this Friday, September 6th. McCowan, Reed, Perkins, Brunt around the table. Time for the bullets, little things that sometimes become big things but rarely do. And with this crowd, don't bet on it. Item. Perk.
Yes.
Some news coming in the next few days, weeks from the IOC.
Out of Buenos Aires. That's right.
Some fairly significant news. That even if you're not an IOC guy, and most of us aren't, we really don't pay that much attention to them, except when they do something stupid, which is really quite regularly. But they're going to have a new president.
They're going to select the most powerful man in sports, I would suggest, give or take a NFL commissioner. But they have to replace Jacques Rogge, the Russell Sprout, and they're about to do that in Buenos Aires. And it's going to be very interesting. I think tomorrow they decide between Madrid, Tokyo, and
Istanbul
for the 2020 Summer Games. And then I think Sunday or Monday they determine whether or not wrestling goes back in. And then Tuesday they pick Jacques' successor. So it's going to be interesting. Bach is... Yeah, we'll see which way that. I mean, you've dealt with IOC guys, Steve. You know about, I mean, Carrion is an interesting guy, the Puerto Rican guy, because he's the money man, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the IOC vice chairman of the finance. He's the money guy. Thomas Bach has been a powerful guy for years. The German, he was the guy who tried to get rid of wrestling, as a matter of fact. And Oswald, the Swiss guy, had a rowing, and the Taiwan fellow who's had a boxing. What's his name? Wu?
Yeah.
CK Wu. And my personal favorite is Ning Sir Ming. He's the guy who owns all the taxi cabs in Singapore.
I will wait to see where the white. I'll wait for the white smoke here. You know, it's the same kind of contest. It'll be
interesting. And of course, Sergey Bubka, the old pole vault.
Yeah, he hasn't got a shot though, right?
He's one of the six, but six guys. No one really knows. Betting favorite is Thomas Bach. But
So you are of the information or opinion that baseball/softball has zero chance.
Yeah, I don't think so. From what I've been reading this week and hearing is that it's now down to whether or not wrestling gets back in
or not.
They do nothing. Because they don't have to put a sport in. And the short list is squash, baseball/softball, and wrestling. And baseball/softball, it's not going to happen, I don't think, because unlike the NBA, the NHL, tennis, golf starting in 16, you're not going to get the best players.
Yeah, plus facility cost where you build something that's of no use for anything else and in places where no one plays baseball.
MLB will never shut down for 2.5 weeks to allow the best players to go to the Olympics.
I'm not disputing that, but here's one of the things that happened over the last few days is those who are conducting or presenting the Tokyo bid for 2020 endorsed baseball softball and made a strong pitch on the basis of it's an integral sport in Japan.
Yeah. I know the Tokyo pitch, Tokyo's 3-5 favorite, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, that's what you don't want to be because remember the last time Chicago was a big favorite and Rio beat them. The time before that, Paris was the big favorite, and London beat them. So
every once in a while, the chalk.
Beijing came in as a favorite,
was a big favorite.
I think they did okay.
Hand wrote at home.
Yeah.
But it's been a while. But it would be interesting. But I think that I noticed today that when the Tokyo people were making their pitch, they made their pitch on the basis that no Japanese Olympic athlete has ever failed a drug test, which is, of course, it's a slam at Istanbul because 31 Turkish athletes in August were busted for using drugs.
Did the Turkish guys mention don't drink the water? Don't drink the radioactive water?
The Turkish guys will be mentioning radioactivity 120 miles from the Olympics.
The Spanish guys just sit there and quietly smile.
Well, the Spanish guys, for their presentation, they trotted out Pau Gasol and had him sit there all by himself and take questions.
Hmm.
And that was their thing, Pau Gasol.
Wow.
So if not Tokyo, the 3-5 favorite, are you assuming that Istanbul is out of it? and Madrid would be the second choice.
They say this is the closest race it's ever been.
Yeah, they, you know, the Istanbul. The idea is that they've never taken the Olympics to that part of the world before. It's the, you know, the bridge between, literally between Europe and Asia, and you know, they might be intrigued. Although it's obviously a volatile place in a volatile part of the world.
Never been to in a Muslim country before.
Yeah, never been to a Muslim country. That's the other part of it.
Yeah, and the one reason that I think maybe Yin Sir Ming has a chance. I'm not saying he will replace Rogue, but he's the one guy who's campaigned on taking the Olympics to Africa. That's been his shtick. He said we need to get to that continent, and you know that's gonna create a lot of favor with all the African voters. So we'll see. I find this stuff very intriguing.
But I would think wrestling's coming back. I think that's I'd be shocked if that doesn't happen.
I think so.
See, I would make Vince McMahon the president of the IOC and bring in wrestling because that would make the entire world happy.
Absolutely.
It's the other wrestling.
To be honest, I don't get too pumped up about that stuff.
But. You never know. You could be said by a river in Tokyo or something.
No. I don't get too excited about the selection process.
Hang out with the IOC. Go to a few of the Olympic swells.
It's pretty interesting.
I'm not in that.
Fantastic. It's truly how the other half lives.
Yeah. No, that's just it.
Item. Peyton Manning throws 7 touchdown passes last night. One of the great performances that we've ever seen, or just Peyton Manning trying to pad his own stats?
No, it's pretty darn good. Yeah. John Harbaugh makes a challenge at the right moment in that game.
Who knows?
Things change. It's very weird for all the genius coaching in the NFL that the guy couldn't see the same replay everybody in the world saw watching the game.
It is amazing, isn't it? And if Dallas Clark holds on to that touchdown pass at the end of the first half, might be a different game. You never know.
Nothing wrong with padding the stats. I was just most pleased that Peyton gave some props to Joe Capp and his YouTube video after the game. That was the best part of the evening for me.
Joe Zuger went through for 7 touchdowns, I believe. You know, so he's in the same class as Joe Zuger.
Did he ever fight anyone on YouTube?
Well, let's see. What time is it?
Floyd Mayweather Jr. will fight Canelo Alvarez.
Week from tomorrow.
Are you going to finish all my sentences from the rest of the show?
Did you know that?
I was about to say that.
You had to read down a lot.
They're like an old married couple.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to be here next week, so I got to talk about this week.
What's he going to make?
$40-something million.
Well, you could be more accurate than that.
$47.1 million.
$41.5 million. The previous record was?
I don't know. Probably him against De La Hoya.
32 by him against Miguel Cotto.
Okay.
And then against Robert Guerrero.
It's a weird thing, though.
$32 million again.
The guy who everybody says they hate.
Yeah.
And you know, that number is not based out in thin air or a contract or anything. It's based on pay-per-view. It's based on revenue generated.
Right.
So it's actually an interesting fight. Canelo Alvarez, Mexican guy, red-haired Mexican guy, big puncher. Floyd will probably show him up.
But what about the whole, like, boxing's dead, right?
Yes, it is.
I firmly believe boxing's
dead.
Sadly,
I would agree with
you. So who keeps paying for this? I used to get pay-per-views back in the day. I wouldn't even think of getting Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view. Just because I don't want to endorse him or pad his bank account.
He is the best fighter of his generation, and as a guy wrote in a very good piece in ESPN the magazine, the last great prize fighter.
Was that your piece?
No, I wish it had been. Boy, I'd be proud of written it.
Hard
it's a great piece.
When you're
the last
are,
great
bro.
Prize fighter.
That was the guy that saw his bank slip too, right? The $123
right,
million, and Floyd said that's one bank account.
That's one bank account. Yeah. I love the fact he's got a bank book he's carrying around, right?
The stunning part of it is, I can vividly recall as if it was yesterday. Muhammad Ali was going to fight Joe Frazier and get $5 million.
Yeah,
that's all the money in the world.
Jack can't cook but the money, right?
That was $5 million for one fight.
Yeah.
Mayweather wouldn't show up at a shopping mall for $5 million.
That was 1971, $5 million.
Oh, by the way, just so you're looking for records, Joe Zuger apparently threw 8 touchdown passes.
Eight. So he's better than Peyton Manning.
But no, just what I said. Fights.
Yeah. Well, clearly.
He just broke Peyton Manning's record.
Clearly, Joe Zuger is a better quarterback than Peyton Manning. The statistics bear that out. Just for fun, Warren Sapp says Ryan Tannehill will throw for more than 5,000 yards and break Dan Marino's record this year.
You ought to bet that. He'd make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Doesn't Warren Sapp have trouble with numbers, though? Because he went bankrupt, didn't he? So maybe he's confused on how many yards.
Tannehill's pretty good. Tannehill had a pretty good year.
Well, that's all right. We like predictions. We like predictions, yes.
Sure. Did you hear this? Brett Hull set to rejoin the St. Louis Blues after 15 years away from the organization, going to become vice president of something. I don't know what vice president of what. Would you make that hire? All Quiet on the Western Front?
That's sure.
Yeah, bring back Adam Oates, too.
And Ryan Braun is calling season ticket holders of the Milwaukee Brewers personally to apologize.
Now, he calls the urine collector and apologizes.
Is it one of those calls where you pick up, you say hello five times, and then a voice starts to come on? Or is
hello.
Is he sitting there?
Yeah. I am Ryan Braun.
Exactly. Is he sitting there dialing the number? Hey, it's Ryan.
What a skunk this guy is. I got no time for this guy. I'm sorry.
Hi, congratulations. You just one click. I get about five of those a day at home. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Perkins, you look beautiful. Thanks for showing up.
Thank you.
Brunt,
I'll see you.
You made it through the entire week.
Yes.
You are a real trooper. Are you coming back next week?
No. Week after.
You're not that big a trooper. And Reed, you didn't colossally embarrass yourself. Now take your beautiful suit downstairs and do TV.
Happy to fill in for someone at the last minute.
Have a nice weekend.